Now in a black, star-sprinkled sky, a dazzling sliver of sunlight crests the Earth. It disappears behind the spinning, watery blue planet as a golden word orbits into view, Universal. Words appear below, an MCA company. Titles appear on a black screen. Universal Pictures presents a City Light Films production, a Martin Brest film, starring Al Pacino in Scent of a Woman. Also starring Chris O'Donnell, James Rebhorn, Gabrielle Anwar, Richard Venture, Bradley Whitford, Ron Eldard, Philip S. Hoffman, music by Thomas Newman, casting by Ellen Lewis, costume designer Audie Bronson Howard, edited by William Steinkamp, Michael Tronick, and Harvey Rosenstock, ACE. Production designer, Angelo Graham. Director of photography, Donald E. Thorin, ASC. Now, autumn leaves sprinkle the green lawn of a prep school campus. Turreted stone buildings stand imposingly over paved pathways crisscrossing the empty yard. Tall, long-limbed trees cast shadows over brick facades. A row of bicycles stands parked under the ornate vaulted ceiling of a cloister walkway. A plaque above an ivy-covered marble bench reads, Class of 1871. Inside a building, a wide staircase leads down to an empty hallway. Glass-enclosed display cases house photographs and trophies. Framed oil portraits hang on either side of an enormous wooden door. Male students spill into the hallway wearing jackets and ties and carrying school books. They jostle each other, laughing and clamoring as they climb the stairs. More titles appear. Executive producer, Ronald L. Schwary. Screenplay by Bo Goldman. Produced and directed by Martin Brest. In the hall, a clean-cut young man stands alone at a bulletin board reading postings under a sign for Thanksgiving weekend jobs. He studies one, house-sitting, care of homebound relative. He bites his lip, contemplating, then writes the phone number in his notebook. Outside in the quad, four young men gather at a bench. One with shaggy red hair lights a cigarette.
I really wish you wouldn't do that around me. It's so filthy.
Listen, don't give me a problem about cigarettes.
Such a filthy habit. Oh my God. Look at this.
A jaguar rolls through the gates.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, this is so appalling.
Oh, I can't believe it. I can't believe they gave it to him.
A man in his 50s gets out of the car.
Oh, this is pathetic. Now he's a loser with the Jaguar.
No, seriously, who did he have to blow to get that thing?
The man breezes past. One of the boys runs after him.
Good morning, sir. Mr. Willis.
Really,
Mr. Trask.
Quite a piece of machinery.
Good morning, Admiral.
Morning to you, sir. Bene.
Bene?
Bene. Fabulous.
What's fabulous?
That fine piece of steel you have back there.
You don't think I deserve it?
No, sir, on the contrary. I think it's great. Why should the headmaster of Baird be seen putt-putting around in some junker? In fact, I think that the Board of Trustees have had their first true stroke of inspiration in some time.
Well, thank you, Hammermeyer.
I'll take that at face value.
I'd expect nothing less, sir. Have a good day.
The headmaster pauses, then enters his office.
Morning, Sunday.
Good morning.
What have we here? Murderer's Row?
Three students wait on a bench. Harry Havemeyer retrieves his mail. His gang of three approaches.
What was that about? Nothing, just saying hello. I like to say hello to Headmaster Trask. Sugarbush, lift tickets and condo vouchers.
I thought we were going to Stowe.
Sugarbush's Stowe. Jimmy.
Yeah, this year we're doing it right. Thanksgiving in Vermont, Christmas in Switzerland.
Now, Christmas in Gstaad is going to cost us.
Gstaad. The G is silent. Gstaad. George?
Gstaad.
Trent?
Stad, man.
Stad. So, what about Stad?
Okay, fine. Okay, the G may be silent, but it's going to take at least $3,000 to get there. I'll have to talk to my father.
Better yet, why don't you have my father talk to your father?
And my father talk to your father.
Outside, they catch up to the clean-cut young man.
Are you going home this weekend, Jazz?
I don't know.
You going home to fucking Idaho for Thanksgiving?
From Oregon.
I meant fucking Oregon.
Charlie, how do you feel about skiing? You in the mood for the white bosom slopes in Vermont?
Behind him, the group snickers.
Got a deal going, kid. 20% off for my friends. My father set it up. Christmas in Switzerland?
Stadt.
Gestadt, dropping the G is phony.
You just said everybody says Stadt.
Not if you've been there. Easter in Bermuda, then Kentucky Derby week. We could fit you in, kid.
Well, how much are these white bosom slopes of Vermont?
$1,200. Includes a 9-course champagne Thanksgiving dinner.
$1,200 is a little rich for my blood, Harry.
Well, how short are you?
Oh, short, Harry. So short it wouldn't be worth the trouble of you and George to measure. But, thanks for asking, all right?
Mm-hmm. If you change your mind.
What'd you do that for? You know he's on aid.
On major holidays, Willis, it's customary for the lord of the manor to offer drippings to the poor.
So full of shit.
Later, Charlie rides a bicycle on a neighborhood street, checking a slip of paper as he rides. He pedals to a stop in front of a small two-story house. Scattered leaves cover the lawn. He climbs the porch steps. From inside, a young woman lifts the door's lace curtain. He smiles hesitantly.
Hi, Mrs. Rossi?
Yes?
I'm here about the weekend job.
She blinks a moment, then grins.
Come on in.
Daddy got pimples. He hates pimples.
Francine, be quiet.
Pimples, yay.
Shush. I'm sorry. The school gave me your name, but I've forgotten it.
It's Charlie. Charlie Sims.
How are you, Charlie?
Fine, thanks.
Right this way.
They maneuver around the children playing on the floor.
You're available for the whole weekend?
Yeah.
Not going home for Thanksgiving?
No.
Good.
They walk out the back to a converted garage cottage.
They put him in a veteran's home, but he hated it. So I told my dad that we'd take him. Before you go, do you mind my telling you a few things? Don't sir him. Don't ask him too many questions. And if he staggers a little when he gets up, don't pay any attention. Charlie, I can tell right away you're the right person for the job. And Uncle Frank's going to like you a lot, too.
Where are you going to be this weekend?
Oh, we're driving to Albany. Donnie, my husband has family there.
She picks up a fat gray tomcat.
You want Tommy in or out?
Leave him out! He's chasing that calico gidge from the track houses again.
She cringes. Releasing the cat, she looks warily at Charlie.
Down deep, the man is a lump of sugar.
Charlie gives a small nod, his lips drawn tightly. He steps past her into the cottage. The woman leaves. Charlie walks hesitantly through an immaculate kitchenette and pauses at the doorway to the living room.
Sir?
Don't call me sir.
I'm sorry. I mean, mister, sir.
Uh-oh. We got a moron here. Is that it?
No, mister. Lieutenant. Yes, sir.
Lieutenant Colonel. 26 years on the line. Nobody ever busted me 4 grades before. Get in here, you idiot.
The room is thick with cigar smoke. Frank Slade sits in a small armchair with a drink balanced beside him.
Come a little closer. I want to get a better look at you.
Charlie steps stiffly forward into the dim, hazy room. He rests his fingertips lightly on a small dining table.
How's your skin, son?
My skin, sir?
Oh, for Christ's sake.
I'm sorry, I don't...
Just call me Frank. Call me Mr. Slade. Call me... Colonel, if you must. Just don't call me sir.
All right, Colonel.
Sims Charles, a senior. You want student aid, Sims?
Yes, I am.
For student aid, Reed Crook. Your father peddles car telephones at a 300% markup. Your mother works on heavy commission in a camera store. Graduated to it from espresso machines.
Charlie swallows hard and stares wide-eyed.
What are you, dying of some wasting disease?
No, I'm right here.
I know exactly where your body is. What I'm looking for is some indication of a brain.
He pours more whiskey.
Too much football without a helmet? Linden's line on Jerry Ford. Deputy debriefer, Paris, peace talk, 68. Snagged a silver star and a silver bar. Threw me at the G2.
G2?
Intelligence, of which you have none.
Charlie's shoulders slump.
Where are you from?
Gresham, Oregon. Colonel.
What does your daddy do in Gresham, Oregon? Count wood chips?
My stepfather and my mom run a convenience store.
Ooh, how convenient. What time they open?
5 a.m.
Close?
1 a.m.
Hard workers. You got me all misty-eyed.
Frank rolls his cigar between his fingers. Charlie shifts uncomfortably.
So what are you doing here in this sparrow fart town?
I attend Baird.
Attend Baird. I know you go to the Baird school. Point is, how do you afford it? Even with the student aid and the folks back home hustling corn nuts.
I won a Young American Merit Scholarship.
Hoo-ah! Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Charlie watches nervously.
Who's that? Is that a little piece of tail?
His niece's daughter stands outside his window and sticks out her tongue.
Get her out of here!
He throws a pillow. Cigar smoke floats cloud-like around Frank as he sits, composed.
Yeah. Can't believe they're my blood.
Frank shakes his head and settles deeper into his chair. Charlie watches, disconcerted.
IQ of sloths and the manners of banshees. He's a mechanic, she's a homemaker. He knows as much about cars as a beauty queen, and she bakes cookies, tastes like wing nuts. As for the tots, they're twits. How's your skin, son? I like my aids to be presentable.
Well, I've had a few zits. But my roommate, he let me his clinic because he's from Chestnut Hill, and he's got
The History of My Skin by Charles Sims. You patronizing me, Pee-wee? You give me that old prep school palaver? Baird School. Bunch of runny-nosed snots in tweed jackets all studying to be George Bush.
Charlie smiles sheepishly.
I believe President Bush went to Andover, Colonel.
Frank stiffens and cocks his head.
You sharpshooting me, punk? Is that what you're doing? Don't you sharpshoot me. You'll give me 40. Then you're going to give me 40 more. Then you're going to pull KP, the grease pit. I'll rub your nose in enlisted men's crud till you don't know which end is up. You understand?
Charlie gapes.
What do you want?
You mean what I want?
What do you want here?
I want a job.
A job?
I want a job so I can make, you know, my plane fare home for Christmas.
Oh, God, you're touching.
Frank swallows. His face glows in the sunlit, smoky haze. Carefully maneuvering his arm around the glass of whiskey, he clicks on a cassette player. Frank settles back into the armchair. Charlie lifts his hands in a slight shrug and glances toward the door. Frank takes another sip, then reaches for the tape player.
Still here, poor mouth?
Hmm?
Convenience store. My ass. Hustling jalapeno dips to the apple seeds. Go on. Dismissed.
Charlie blinks.
Dismissed!
He licks his lips, then turns to leave. Frank pops the cassette back in.
Mrs. Rossi?
Charlie, we're up here. Come on up.
The Rossis bathe their two kids.
This is Donnie.
Hey, Charlie. Hi. Listen, Miss Rossi, I got the feeling I screwed up.
Oh, you couldn't have.
It was a bad interview.
That was no interview, Charlie. You're it. You're the only one that showed up. You have to take the job. He sleeps a lot. You can watch television, call your girlfriend. I promise you an easy $300.
I don't get an easy feeling.
His bark is worse than his bite. You know, he was a great soldier. A real hero. The man grows on you. By Sunday night, you'll be best friends. Charlie, please. I want to get away with my husband for a few days, and Uncle Frank won't come with us. 6 months ago, he could sometimes tell light from dark, but now there's nothing. I just feel better having someone else around, just in case.
Holding her towel-wrapped son, she looks pleadingly at Charlie and sighs.
Please.
Okay, Miss Rossi. Sure.
Thank you, Charlie.
Evening in the school library. Charlie works behind a checkout desk.
Chance, hold up.
George Willis runs to the desk carrying books.
How you doing?
I'm good.
That's great.
This can't go out. This is on reserve.
Here's the thing. Hey, need the book tonight. Thanksgiving quiz, the big shit pressed it in the morning.
Yeah, I know. That's why he put it on reserve. See, this is our only copy.
Chaz, I'm pulling an all-nighter. Without that book, I'm dead. Okay?
It's not back by 7:30. It's going to be my ass.
Oh, I promise. I promise.
Outside, Harry Havemeyer, Trent Potter, and Jimmy Jameson walk stealthily to a lamppost. They lean a ladder against the post, and Harry begins to climb, carrying a giant limp balloon in one hand. Trent anxiously steadies the ladder's base, while Jimmy holds a bucket of white paint, their movements quick and covert. Charlie and George exit the library together.
Just a second, I gotta lock up.
Charlie locks the library's outer door and catches up to George. They walk along a campus path.
God, can you wait to get out of this dump or what?
Meanwhile, Harry secures the balloon to the lamppost, pulling a knot tight with his teeth while holding on with his hands.
Where are you guys going skiing again?
Sugarloaf or...
It's bush, Chaz. Bush, sugar bush.
They stop and stare across the campus quad at the pranksters.
That's my boys. What are you doing?
Keep your voice down! I'll tell you about it in the morning!
A teacher approaches. George heads her off.
Miss Hunsaker.
George!
You have a nice day?
Why all the noise?
I'm messing around with Chaz.
Good evening, Charles.
Miss Hunsaker.
They look toward the lamppost. The boys flee into the night.
What was that?
I don't know, ma'am.
Well, who were those boys?
Oh, who knows?
What were they doing? Charles?
Did you make this scarf yourself?
No, George, I bought it.
Yeah? Because it's a beauty.
Thank
it really
you, George.
Is. In case I don't see you before the Thanksgiving holidays, Why don't you give me one of your big hugs?
Oh, George.
Please?
Good evening, boys.
Come on.
Charlie looks at the now empty campus. The next morning, Headmaster Trask's shiny Jaguar tools along the campus driveway. He pulls over and parks. Students congregate on their way to class. Trask gets out of the car.
Mr. Trask is our fearless leader. A man of learning, a voracious reader.
The students stop and watch.
He can recite the Iliad in ancient Greek while fishing for trout in a rippling creek.
Endowed with wisdom
of judgment sound. Nevertheless, about him, the questions abound.
In a building above the crowd, Harry, Trent, and Jimmy turn the handle of an air tank.
How does Mr. Trask make such wonderful deals? Why did the trustees buy him Jaguar wheels?
He wasn't conniving.
He wasn't crass. He merely puckered his lips.
Above the Jaguar, the yellow balloon fills with air.
And kissed their ass.
A cartoon on the balloon shows Trask kissing a trustee's ass. Trask takes a set of keys from his pocket and jumps, swiping at the high, gorging yellow balloon. He misses and chuckles casually to the students gathered behind him. The three boys watch from above.
Come on. Come on.
Trask balances on the car's doorframe and slashes from his elevated perch.
One more. One more.
He takes a mighty stab. Gallons of white paint explode from the punctured balloon, coating Trask and the Jaguar. Upstairs, the boys cackle in triumph. Trask wipes his eyes with a handkerchief. In the crowd, Charlie looks on in amused disbelief. George yells from behind a notebook. Later, Charlie and George sit in his office.
Mr. Sims, Mr. Willis. Mrs. Hunsicker says that both you gentlemen were at a vantage point last night to observe who was responsible for this stunt.
They both stare blankly.
Who was it?
I really couldn't tell you, sir. I thought I saw someone fooling with a lamppost, but by the time I had pulled focus, they were gone.
Mr. Sims?
I couldn't say.
That automobile is not just a possession of mine. That automobile was presented to me by the Board of Trustees. It is a symbol, the standard of excellence for which this school is known. And I will not have it tarnished.
The automobile?
Trask narrows his eyes at George.
The standard, Mr. Willis.
George gives a fake chuckle.
What's your position, Mr. Sims?
On what, sir?
On preserving the reputation of Baird.
I'm for Baird.
Then who did it?
I really couldn't say for sure.
George smiles at Charlie, then quickly composes himself. Trask regards them.
Very well.
He walks behind his desk and lowers himself into a chair while the boy sits stiffly.
First thing Monday morning, I'm convening a special session of the Student Faculty Disciplinary Committee. As this is a matter which concerns the whole school, the entire student body will be present. There will be no classes, no activities. Nothing will transpire at this institution until that proceeding is concluded.
George glances sidelong at Charlie.
And if at that time we are no further along than we are now, I will expel you both.
Charlie stares unmoving. George fidgets and slumps.
Mr. Willis, would you excuse us?
Have a nice Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too, Mr. Willis.
I will.
They shake hands. George departs.
Mr. Sims, I'm not quite through with you yet.
Charlie licks his lips and draws in a breath. The headmaster walks around the desk and sits beside him.
One of the few perks of this office is that I am in power to handle certain matters on my own as I see fit. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Good. The Dean of Admissions at Harvard and I have an arrangement. Along with the usual sheaf of applicants submitted by Baird, of which virtually, well, two-thirds, are guaranteed admittance, I add one name. Somebody who's a standout, and yet underprivileged. A student who cannot afford to pay the board and tuition in Cambridge. Do you know on whose behalf I drafted a memo this year?
Oh, sir.
You? You, Mr. Sims.
Charlie bows his head.
Now, can you tell me who did it?
No, sir, I can't.
You take the weekend to think about it, Mr. Sims. Good afternoon.
Charlie swallows hard. Now, in the schoolyard.
What'd he say? Nothing.
What do you mean, nothing?
He said the same thing he said to both of us. He just said it over to me.
You know what he's doing? He's good cop, bad cop in us. He knows I'm old guard. You're fringe. He's going to bear down on me and soft soap you. Did he try soft soap you? Did he?
No.
Chad, I detect a slight panic pulse from you. Are you panicking?
Yeah, a little.
Come on. You're on scholarship, right?
Yeah.
You got a scholarship from Oregon. At Baird. You're a long way from home, Chaz.
What was that got to do with anything?
I don't know how it works out there. But how it works here, we stick together. It's us against them no matter what. We don't cover our ass. We don't tell our parents. Stonewall everybody. And above all, never. Never. Leave any of us twisting in the wind. And that's it.
Well, what does it have to do with me being on a scholarship?
Hey. I'm just trying to bring up speed, kid. That's it.
Thanks.
Charlie stuffs his hands in his pockets.
I'll tell you what. Give me a few hours to figure out the moves. And call me tonight in Vermont. I'll be at the Sugar Bush Lodge.
Alright.
You alright?
Yeah, I guess so.
Hey.
Later, Charlie stands in Mrs. Rossi's kitchen.
Try to keep him down to 4 drinks a day.
If you can keep him down to 40, you're doing good.
Let me try to water them down a little. Do you know how to do that?
It's a long ride, honey.
Well, get the bags in the car. I'll be right out.
Mommy, don't forget Uncle Frank's walk.
Francine mimics swinging a cane.
Oh, yeah. You have to air him out a little every day. Why don't you go on back there, get yourself oriented, and then I'll come out in a minute and give you telephone numbers and stuff.
Charlie cautiously opens Frank's door.
Well, I wouldn't try a thing like that unless I knew, would I? Well, just let me speak to her. Hello, beautiful. Is that you? Yeah, we spoke yesterday. Did you have a glass of wine with lunch? You sound a little dusky. Just a minute, sweetheart. You're back, huh? Tenacious. Get out my dress blues. They're in a garment bag in the closet. Check the top dresser drawer, take out the shoulder boards, and affix them shoulders right and left. ASAP. That means now. Hello. Sorry to keep you waiting, sweetheart. Now, you know, I'm not the kind of guy who likes to rush things, but I'm catching a 4 o'clock at Logan. I'm looking out my window, and there's not a taxi in sight. What happened to Chet? He didn't invest in a radio yet? Ha! Well, get your driver on it. Tell him to get a move on. Yes. Some kind of body has got to go with that bedroom voice. One day I'm going to swing by and get a better look at it. You bet. Bye. Y Val packs underneath the bed. Get it out. Put the boards on the blues. Fold them in.
Are we going someplace, Colonel?
What business is that of yours? Don't shrug, imbecile. I'm blind. Save your body language with a bimbi. Now get my gear out.
Charlie lays a garment bag across a cot.
It's almost three. The goddamn Flintstones haven't left yet.
Outside the window, Mr. Rossi lifts his son and settles him into the station wagon.
Here comes Mrs. Rossi now.
Damn it! Said goodbye to me three times today. Well, she got separation anxiety? Cut her off at the door. Hi, honey. Bye, honey.
She kisses his cheek and hugs him briefly.
I wish you were coming with us.
Me too. Maybe next time.
He reaches out his palm and pats her face while she gives him a regretful smile.
Drive carefully.
Charlie, this is where we'll be. Good luck, Charlie. Don't let him drink too much.
She hands him a piece of paper and trots down the steps to the car.
See you, Charlie.
And no 900 numbers. He loves to talk dirty.
Mr. Rossi backs the station wagon down the dirt driveway. Francine sticks out her tongue at Charlie.
All right, let's get to work.
Charlie slowly steps back inside. In Frank's living room, Charlie fumbles with the straps of a suitcase.
El Buckle's giving you trouble. Living the Boy Scouts, Sluggo?
I made Tenderfoot.
Tenderfoot, my foot. Convenience store mama's boy. Here. Take a look at that.
Charlie reaches for his arm.
Touch me again. I'll kill you, you little son of a bitch. I touch you. Understand? My shoulder boards are in the top dresser drawer. Get them some. The epaulets with the silver oak leaf.
Frank takes over packing the suitcase. Charlie walks timidly to a bureau and pulls open the top drawer. He finds the epaulets sheathed in a plastic pouch, starts to speak, then closes the drawer and carries them to Frank. Frank meticulously arranges the suitcase.
Are these
taxi come yet?
Colonel, where are we going?
Where are we going? Freak Show Central.
Where's that?
New York City.
Charlie's mouth gapes.
That's in New York, son. New York State.
Mrs. Rossi didn't say anything to me about going anywhere.
She forgot.
Well, should we call her? Are
you kidding me?
I just call her.
By the time they get to Albany in that Huffmobile he drives, it'll be opening day at Saratoga.
No, I can't go to New York City.
Why not?
New York City's too much responsibility. I can't...
Ah, responsibility. I had a lot of 17-year-olds, my first platoon. I took care of them. All set.
He smacks the suitcase and smooths his jacket.
How do I look? Tickets, money, speech. Old Washington joke from my days with Lyndon. Oh, I knew I could count on transportation. Are you ready?
He puts on dark glasses and lifts his bag.
This is not Panmunjom. A simple yes will do. Good. Here you go. Come on. Hop to, son. You're in front of me. Let's go. Homster? Come here, boy.
He grabs up the cat and gives it a hug.
Come on. Yeah, Tomster. Yeah. Remember, when in doubt, fuck.
Later, their cab arrives at an airport.
Good afternoon, sir. Where's our destination?
Our destination, New York City. Home of the brave.
Yes, sir. We got two for the shuttle to New York.
I'm not shuttling anywhere. Look at those tickets. It's first class right now.
Yes, sir. First class.
Colonel, you bought me a ticket? I never said I'd go to New York.
Wow, what are you, some kind of chicken shit? Sticks to job description only?
846, sir.
As you were, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Which way's the door?
Charlie grabs his arm.
Are you blind? Are you blind?
Of course not.
Then why do you keep grabbing my goddamn arm? I take your arm.
Charlie's hands hang limply at his sides. Frank takes his elbow and follows.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry. How would you know? Watching MTV all your life.
Gentlemen?
Yes.
Now seated on an airplane.
Jack Daniels?
You bet.
Diet slice?
The old diet slice.
And a water.
Thank you, Daphne.
Certainly, sir.
Charlie watches her walk away, his face puzzled. Frank gulps his whiskey.
How did you know her name?
Well, she's wearing Florence. Now, that's an English cologne. But her voice is California Chickie. Now, California Chickie, bucking for English lady. Call her Daphne. Oh, big things may happen to that little thing of yours.
Charlie rolls his eyes.
The Colonel. I'll get you to New York, right? But then I'm going to have to turn right around and come back.
Oh. Well, Chuck, you got to do what you got to do.
Charlie. I hate her. Or Charles.
Sorry. I can't blame you, though. Chuck is a...
Frank's eyes look askance and he frowns in agreement.
So why are we going to New York?
All information will be given on a need-to-know basis. Where's Daphne? Let's get her down here.
She's in the back.
Tails in the tail. Oh, but I still smell her. Women. What could you say? Who made them? God must have been a fucking genius. Hair. They say the hair is everything, you know. Have you ever buried your nose in a mountain of curls? Just wanted to go to sleep forever. Or lips. And when they touched yours were like that first swallow of wine after you just crossed the desert. Tits. Hoo-ah. Big ones, little ones. Nipples staring right out at you, like secret searchlights. Legs. I don't care if they're Greek columns or secondhand Steinways. What's between them? Passport to heaven. I need a drink. Yes, Mr. Sims. There's only two syllables in this whole wide world worth hearing.
Charlie slides his eyes curiously toward Frank.
Pussy.
Charlie lets loose a gaping smile.
Are you listening to me, son? I'm giving you pearls here.
I guess you really like women.
Oh, above all things. A very, very distant second. Is a Ferrari.
He rapturously closes his eyes a moment and breathes deeply. Charlie turns to him and smiles.
Charlie? Give me a hand.
Charlie shakes Frank's hand.
This is just the start of your education, son.
Nighttime in Midtown Manhattan. Skyscrapers stand with window lights gleaming. A taxi pulls up to the glowing entryway of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. Frank unfurls his black walking cane.
Where are we?
Where are we? The cynosure of all things civilized. The Waldorf Astoria. You know, the last time I was here, Charlie, was with a G2 from Brussels. Had a Ferrari. Every day I held a door open for the fucker. Never even offered me a ride. Oh, fuck him.
He bumps a wall.
He's dead and I'm blind.
Now in a suite.
Spread the word.
He tips the bellman.
And the intelligence will be forthcoming?
Sir?
On the escort scene.
Yes, sir. And welcome to the Waldorf.
Gracias, amigo. Puerto Ricans. Always made the best infantrymen.
Frank walks to a wall bar stocked with crystal glasses. He runs his hand over miniature liquor bottles. He pauses, his hand hovering over the bar.
I'm home again. Give me an inventory on this.
Using his cane, Frank walks across the room while Charlie straightens the bottles.
All right, where am I? In Asia? He told me the phone was on the other side of the room, didn't he? By the windows?
It's right here.
Okay. We're in business.
Frank picks up a phone on a desk and punches the buttons.
Get me the Oak Room. How's that inventory coming?
It's Jim Beam and Early Times.
Quartermaster's on the take again. Hello, is Sheldon or Mac there? This is Lieutenant Colonel Frank Slade. I used to be a regular. I used to come in with a General Garvish. Yeah, that's probably because he's at Arlington, 6 feet under. Now, listen up. I want a table for two, and I don't mean Siberia. 8:15. Clear them little bottles off. And when I get off the phone here, call up Hyman, tell him I want it wall-to-wall with John Daniels.
don't you mean Jack Daniels?
He may be Jack to you, son, but when you've known him as long as I have. That's a joke. Hello, this is Lieutenant Colonel Frank Slade. I would like a limo. 8 o'clock.
Charlie stares in surprise. Frank takes a silver flask from his breast pocket.
What are you drinking?
Nothing, thanks. I don't use it.
What's useful about it?
He hoists the flask.
I don't know. Listen, Colonel, I have to get going.
Where are you going?
Back to school. I've got some, you know, real important stuff I have to take care of.
Very well. But I never let my aides leave on an empty stomach. You'll dine with me, and then my driver will transport you to the airport for the Boston shuttle departing at 2200 hours. Meanwhile, unpack my bag. I'm going to christen the latrine.
Later in a limousine on a wide avenue.
What's your name, driver?
Manny, sir.
Manny. The bellhops at the Waldorf. Are they any good at getting escorts?
I wouldn't know, sir.
What would you know?
About what?
About you know what?
Well, maybe I could manage something.
I'm talking top of the line now.
Let me think about this, sir.
Frank leans back against the leather seat. Looking out a window, Charlie sighs. He stares, preoccupied.
What's the matter with you?
With me?
The car feels heavy. You know why? You got the fucking weight of the world on your shoulders.
Look, I got a little problem at school, that's all.
Spit it out.
It's not a big deal, all right? Where are we going? We're going to the Oak Room or something?
If it's not a big deal, why did you say real important stuff? What are you doing, banging the dean's daughter?
No, I'm in a little trouble.
What kind of trouble?
I saw some guys doing something.
To tell or not to tell, or it's your ass. Hmm?
How'd you know that?
I'm a wizard. Give me the details. Come on.
There's this guy at school named Harry. He's this real rich kid, and he, like, runs the show.
Who else?
There's another guy, George, but George didn't do anything of it. George and I saw Harry and his buddies doing something.
Now, the folks at Baird, they know that you and George can identify the guilty parties?
Yeah, they think we can.
George is a friend of yours.
He's not a friend, but he's all right.
You trust him?
Yeah, I guess so.
He's on scholarship, too?
No, why?
We got George, we got Harry, we got trouble. They're rich, you're poor, you want to get rich. You want to graduate Baird, become a rich big shot like them. Am I right?
No. No, it's not that way at all.
Okay, Charlie.
We are, gentlemen, the Oak Room.
The Oak Room! Bring us a menu and double Jack Daniels on the rocks. Charlie, sit down.
Perhaps you'll feel more comfortable in this, sir.
In the restaurant, a hostess holds a suit jacket. Charlie slips it on over his sweater.
You look great.
Frank seats himself at an elegant dinner table. A maitre d' hands leather-bound menus to Charlie.
Here we are, Charlie. The Oak Room. Now, read me the bill of fare.
Let's see. You've got the Oak Room burger and fries for $24.
Where's the booze? Flowing like mud around here.
$24 hamburger? What's the story?
What story?
Are you like a rich miser or something?
No, I'm just your average blind man.
Your average blind man. How do you plan on paying for all this stuff?
Crisp, clean dollars. American. I saved up my disability checks.
How much did you save? I mean, we flew first class. We're at the Waldorf Astoria. It's a $24 hamburger restaurant.
All part of a plan, Charlie.
Well, do you want to let me in on it?
Why should I? You're not interested. You don't give a shit. You're leaving on that last shuttle out of LaGuardia. Hmm? Ooh!
Frank fakes a look at his wrist.
You got 15 minutes, son. I don't think you're going to make it. Unless the Oak Room keeps some complimentary helicopter on the roof. No, sir. No. You're here till tomorrow.
You said that the last shuttle leaves at 2200 hours. That's 10 o'clock, right?
Last I heard.
Yeah, well, it's only 8:30.
I lied. Leaves at 9.
It leaves at 9 o'clock?
Calm down. Calm down.
Frank gulps his whiskey.
The truth is, Charlie, I need a guide dog. Help me execute my plan.
What plan?
You have a right to know. It's not really a plan, Charlie. It's sort of a... more like a tour. A little tour of pleasures. Stay in a first-class hotel. Eat an agreeable meal. Drink a nice glass of wine. See my big brother. Nothing like family, you know. And then, make love to a terrific woman. After that.
His face grows slack and he gently places his hands on the table.
Yeah?
I'm gonna lie down on my big, beautiful bed at the Waldorf and blow my brains out.
Charlie blanches.
May I tell you our specials?
You may, sir.
Tonight we have charred venison with buckwheat spetzel and green peppercorn. Ooh. Grilled veal paillard, tomato tapenade, and roasted eggplant.
Give me a napkin. My mouth's watering.
And if you would like our crepe souffle for dessert, it will be a good idea to order now.
Yes, on the souffle. Give us a half a minute on the rest.
Very good, sir.
I'm leaning toward the spatzel.
Colonel Slade.
Charlie, rolls on the table? Give them to me. You should try these rolls, Charlie. I used to dream about them when I was at Fort Huachuca.
Colonel Slade.
Bread's no good, west of the Colorado. Water's too alkaline.
Colonel Slade, did you say... did I hear you right? You said you're going to kill yourself?
No. I said I was going to blow my brains out. Try one of these rolls, Charlie. I buttered it for you.
No, I don't want a roll, all right?
Okay. Have a radish. Ah. Hello. Bring me a double Jack Daniels on the rocks.
Yes, sir, right away.
Charlie motions to the waiter to add water.
Please, don't do that. Don't do that.
Charlie stares tensely. A woman sits down at the table behind Frank. He leans back, his head tilted slightly toward her, and inhales deeply.
What a marvelous place.
Okay.
After dinner in the hotel suite, Frank walks to a couch in the sitting room.
Your billet is here. You'll find bedding in the closet on the shelf. In the morning, the area will be returned to sitting room mode no later than 0700 hours.
Charlie gives him a half-hearted salute.
What was that?
There's nothing.
Next time, snap it out. Thumb to palm, index finger, through little digit, smartly aligned. Sharp to the hairline. Down. Too many men, far better than you, have executed that courtesy. And if you're smart, you won't try it again.
He takes a step closer to Charlie.
This bat has got sharper radar than the Nautilus. Don't fuck with me, Charlie.
They stand nose to nose. Charlie blinks. Frank gives a quick shake of his head, then trudges into the bedroom with slow steps.
So you get a good night's sleep, son.
The next morning, Charlie sleeps face down on the couch, covered with a plaid blanket.
It's a lovely day today. So whatever you gotta do, you got a lovely day to do it in. That's true.
Frank stands in the sitting room while a young woman tailors a new suit. Charlie sits up groggily.
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
This is Sophia, Charlie. She's a magician with a needle. Sophia's working me up a little Glenn Plaid number, and I've asked her if she'd put something together for you.
I don't need any clothes, Carl.
Standard issue for an upscale urban assignment. You don't like the clothes, Charlie? On completion of duty, you can give them away. Juice, coffee, and other assorted goodies on the trolley over there. Why don't you get yourself up, get yourself together? It's a great day for singing a song, and it's a great day for moving along. And it's a great day for morning to night, and it's a great day for everybody's plight.
Charlie stares at Frank from the breakfast cart.
How are you feeling today, Colonel?
Super. Superior. Superfluous. Young Sophie here is working Thanksgiving because she's trying to put herself through college. I told her my young friend Charlie's headed for college.
Excuse me.
Where are you going?
I need to use the phone.
What's wrong with the phones in here?
Yeah, I know, but I don't want to disturb you.
You're not disturbing me. Make your call.
I'd kind of like to be private.
Stay out of my room! This is as private as you're going to get.
Charlie walks uneasily to the phone in the sitting room.
But if you've got something, must be done. And it can't be done, my woman. Sophia, what are the chances of suiting you up sometime?
Sugar Bush Lodge.
Hi, George Willis, please.
Sophia removes Frank's jacket.
Hello?
George. Hey, it's Charlie.
Hey, Chaz. Next year, you got to come up with us. White powder on a base of snow bunnies. Chaz, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You told me to call you for the moves.
All right. For now, the move is no move. Status quo. Everything's the way we left it.
Well, how do we leave it?
You see no evil, hear no evil. You know what I mean, Chaz?
Yeah. Say no evil, hear no evil.
Okay, then. Walk like you talk.
All right.
George Willis, huh?
Yeah.
George Willis. That makes his father probably George Willis Sr. Charlie, I ask you, what do you think Big George is going to feel about Little George, seeing no evil, hearing no evil?
Well, we're not going to tell our parents. We're just going to keep it between ourselves.
Oh, George isn't going to tell his father about this thing. Damn decent of him. Ooh! Ah!
Scusi, colonello.
Prego. I love it when you hurt me.
She takes out a pin from Frank's pants.
Tell me now, Charlie. This, George Willis Jr., what's his father do?
I don't really know.
Well, I'm going to tell you. When George Willis Sr. is not busy as a million-dollar man for Aetna Casualty, or is it New England distributor for the Chrysler Corporation, he concerns himself with his young son, George Willis Jr.
Yeah, well, George isn't going to say anything to his father.
Oh, Charlie. Big George going to wind up little George, and little George going to sing like a canary. And if you're hip, kid, you're going to hop to, too.
Well, you've got this all figured out, don't you?
Well, it don't take no Young America Merit Scholarship to figure this one out. Charlie, you had a little life, so you decided to go to the Baird School to put yourself in the market for a big one. Now, in order to stay in the running, you're going to have to tell these people what they want to know.
You think so?
Are we finished, Sophia?
Yes.
Grazie, grazie, andante.
Frank steps toward Charlie.
Charlie? If you don't sing now, you're going to end up not only shelving biscuits in some convenience store in the Oregon burbs, but probably the last word you'll ever hear yourself say just before you croak going to be, have a nice day and come back soon. Sophia, measure up Charlie here, pronto. We got a date for Thanksgiving.
We got a date?
My brother's place. W.R. Slade, White Plains, New York.
Colonel, I can't go with you to your brother's place. I mean, I should be getting back to school.
But you gotta have Thanksgiving somewhere. I mean, eats and treats. I can use the company, Charlie.
He looks at Frank for a long moment, then reluctantly nods.
Well, does he know I'm coming?
He doesn't know I'm coming. But wait till you see the look on his face when I walk through the door. Oh, he loves me. Oh, Charlie, about your little problem. There are two kinds of people in this world. Those who stand up and face the music, and those who run for cover. Cover is better. Okay, Sophia, suit them up. Make them pretty.
The limousine pulls up in front of an upscale suburban home. A holiday wreath hangs on the door. Frank clasps Charlie's arm as they climb the front steps.
Careful. Should I ring it?
Yeah.
They stand waiting, both wearing new suits. A man in his 30s gives them a hostile glare.
Yes?
Yes. Who is this?
It's Randy.
Randy? You knew?
I'm your nephew.
Ha! Here I am. Your sister's been hoarding me long enough. Thought it's time to spread the riches around.
Uncle Frank.
Gloria.
Gail.
Of course. Say hello to the potluck party from New York City. Good old Uncle Frank, and this here with him is Charlie Sims, star halfback of the Baird School football team. They not only beat Exeter and Groton this year, but Aquinas High School, too. Where's your miserable father? Wait, no. Let's surprise him. Give that fat heart of his an attack. Willie! Oh, Willie!
Willie and a second son, Gary, sit in a comfortable firelit den. Willie rises, his face creased and strained, and walks toward the entryway. He pauses, hands in pockets, impassively regarding his younger brother.
Hello, Frank.
How you doing, Red?
Okay.
Here's my hand. Charlie, meet W.R. Slade.
Nice to meet you, sir.
The original bulging briefcase man. Gretchen, I smell those prunes. We talking turkey, my bear?
Yes, we are.
Ooh.
He sidles close to her.
Let's have a whiff. Come on. You know I always had a sneaker for you.
He hugs her close.
Ah. Where are you, Gary? I heard you cough.
Right here.
Who are you again?
I'm just here at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel with you. Is it your brother?
W.R.'s final issue. How are you doing, son?
Yes, my brother. Who the hell are you?
I'm kind of taking care of him for the weekend.
Charlie!
He tosses his cane. Charlie misses.
Sorry. Where's the booze? Flowing like mud around here.
To tell you the truth, the colonel's not well, I don't think.
Not well?
I think he's a little lonely.
Why don't you take him to your family's for dinner?
I heard that. Pay no attention to him, Charlie. That's just big brother talk. He's been watching out for me since day one. Bailed me out of more trouble than he'd like to remember. Hmm?
Here, let me take your coat.
I meant to pick up some vino on my way up, but I blew it. I'll send you the Rothschild again for Christmas. Only let's see how Thanksgiving goes.
I'll set two more places.
Here's your drink, Frank.
Oh, thank you, Ray. Still with Snow Queen sugar?
Snowflake. Why do you always get that wrong?
Because it's not important for me to get it right. What are you doing there now?
I'm vice president for marketing.
Hoo-ah! Congratulations. Sugar is shit, though. I told General Abrams install honey in the commissaries. If the K-50s didn't blow your brains out, sugar sure as shit was gonna...
Why don't we all sit down?
Ooh. Mitsuki. Rhymes with nookie. Be careful. When the wife gets restless, wife gets racy.
Okay, let's go and eat, shall we?
By all means.
They entered the dining room.
Thank you, Charlie.
Where do you want to sit, Frank, or are you going to arrange yourself at the head again?
Oh, any old card table will do. This is fine.
He sits at the head. Later after dinner.
Where was I? Oh. So, I wake up, it's 4 a.m, I don't know who I'm with, or why I'm there, and where I am. What am I gonna do? I got this Asian flower on the one hand, all giggly and dewy-like, and this hard-boiled Navy nurse out of Omaha on the other. Now, we're three across the bed, not a stitch of clothes on. It comes to me. Let East meet West, and we'll build a golden bridge. I felt like I just joined the Corps of Engineers.
Frank's cigar smoke wafts forward. The family shifts uncomfortably in their chairs.
We all still here?
It's a beautiful story. Do you always enjoy shocking people, Uncle Frank?
Honey.
I didn't know you were so easily shocked, Randy. I admire your sensibilities. I'm touched.
Dad, you remember the time... I persuaded Frank to go to the kennel.
What about it?
He almost put the seeing eye dog business out of business.
Cool it, Randy.
It's over and done with, you know?
Indeed it is, Gary. Indeed it is. So is dinner. Charlie, what time do you have? I think we better be getting back.
You ever given any thought to a Braille watch, Frank?
Randy.
Stevie Wonder wears one, or do you rank on him, too?
Honey, please.
It's all right, Gloria. I enjoy Randy's observation.
My wife's name is Gail, Frank. Can you hear that? Gail.
Excuse me. Gail. Gail strikes me as a very beautiful woman. But you know, there's a little tension in her voice. I don't know what it is. Could be one of two things. Either Gail is nervous or unsatisfied.
Randy's face hardens.
What's your point, Uncle Frank?
You ought to go down on her.
Cut it out, Frank, will you?
You've gotten so wrapped up in the sugar business, you've forgotten the taste of real honey!
Frank, for God's sake.
Hear that voice? There's fire under that dress.
Will you cut it out?
Why don't you just get the fuck out of here? Why don't you get that... Ooh, get in your limousine, go down to the Bowery, get with the other fucking drunks where you belong.
Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Just take it easy.
What for? You want me to lay off of Chucky because he's blind?
No, but I mean...
My friend's name is Charles. He doesn't like to be called Chucky.
I mean, this is supposed to be like a family get-together. This is...
Just a warning.
Jesus Christ, another sucker who thinks this shit heals a war hero.
Ooh,
Charlie licks his lips nervously.
Well, once, maybe. Suppose he told you about his days on Lyndon Johnson's staff. Did he tell you that?
I was going to go. Now I'm not leaving.
Yeah, Frank was earmarked for general.
Earmarked? Good word.
Frank likes to spit in everybody's eye.
Randy, that's enough.
So they, what do they call it, Frank, when they give you the shaft in the military?
Passed over.
Right, Frank was passed over for promotion. A couple times.
Frank sips a whiskey. Charlie sits stiffly, eyes wide.
You want to know what happened then?
Will you shut your mouth?
He blew himself up.
Stop it, Randy.
Our colonel here had a grenade juggling act at Fort Bragg or wherever it was they dumped him.
Fort Benning.
He was teaching hand-to-hand combat to second lieutenants in the...
Randy, look at me when you're talking to me now, son.
I'm looking, Frank. His partner in the act was some captain.
Major Vincent Squires.
Yeah, whoever he was. Before going on, they'd have themselves a locale breakfast. A screwdriver for Frank, Bloody Mary for his partner.
Oh, Vincent drank sea breezes.
Judge Advocate at Benning said Colonel Slade had four. So his partner's one. He's really flying in class. He gets all excited. He starts pulling the pins out. One grenade got away from him.
Boom.
Randy gestures flippantly toward Frank.
One that got away.
Well, the pin was in, Frank claims. In or out, what difference does it make? What kind of fucking lunatic juggles grenades?
Vinny came out okay.
And all Frank lost was his eyesight.
Randy shrugs. Frank blinks and swallows dryly.
You want to know the truth?
You got a handle on that, do you, Randy?
He was an asshole before.
Hoo-ah!
Now all he is a blind asshole.
Hoo-ah!
Charlie looks on, stunned. The family sits wilting in their chairs.
Hey, God's a funny guy.
God doth have a sense of humor.
Maybe God thinks some people don't deserve to see. You get the point, Jackie?
Frank grabs Randy's throat.
His name is Charles. You can say that, can't you?
Charles.
This is Randy. It's Ranger Choco. Teaching those second lieutenants.
Colonel, Lickle,
little
please.
Pressure. I bust your windpipe.
Colonel, I don't care what he said to me, all right?
Charles.
Colonel, just let go, please.
Frank releases Randy from the chokehold as Gail and Gretchen flutter around him. Charlie turns Frank away from the skirmish. Frank brushes back his hair, sighs wearily, and shifts unsteadily from foot to foot. His face sags.
Gretchen? You outdid yourself. If you twist my arm hard enough, we're talking Turkey Marbella next year. Who knows?
Leading with his cane, he walks toward the doorway. Willie places a hand on Frank's arm.
Frank. Goodbye, Willie.
Willie's face pinches with concern.
I'm no fucking good. And I never have been.
Willie sniffs and gives a small smirk.
Come on, Charlie. Get the coats.
Willie watches, his face set, as Frank and Charlie leave the house. Charlie heaves a sigh as they walk to the waiting limo. Manny briskly opens the car door.
Where are you, compadre? Vamos!
The next morning, in the Waldorf Hotel suite, Charlie sleeps on the couch. He wakes to a clinking noise, then looks around, puzzled. Standing in boxer shorts and a t-shirt, he sluggishly pulls on his pants. He walks to the colonel's closed door and stands outside, listening. Charlie enters Frank's bedroom.
You got a watch?
Charlie looks cautiously at a bedroom clock.
It's 7:20.
I didn't ask you the time. I asked if you had a watch.
Yeah, in the other room.
Get it.
Charlie hesitates, confused.
Carl, there's a clock right next to your bed.
Does it have a second hand?
Watching Frank uneasily, Charlie turns to switch on an overhead light.
Time me.
Frank sits at a table covered with a white cloth. The disassembled parts of a .45 caliber pistol lie in perfect order before him. He deftly reassembles the gun, sliding the parts into place with military precision. Charlie watches and licks his lips fearfully.
How long?
About 30 seconds.
I'm rusty.
Where did you get a gun, Colonel?
Piece of weapon, Charlie. Never a gun.
Where did you get the piece?
I'm an officer in the United States Army. This is my sidearm.
But you're not an officer anymore.
So I'm retired, so what? Officer never relinquishes his .45.
Yeah, well, you better relinquish it to me. I'm going to have to call Mrs. Rossi.
Good idea.
And I'm going back to school.
Even better. Blue skies, green lights. I hope you have a wonderful trip. That felt like 25. You ought to be able to do a 45 in 25. Did you time me?
No, it did not. I'm calling Albany.
He removes a slip of paper from his wallet. Suddenly, Frank snatches the paper and shoves it into his mouth. He chews, then swallows.
That was stupid.
Was it? You stuck with me, Charlie.
No, I'm not. I'm out of here.
Oh, yeah? Where you going? New Hampshire? You got no money? How you gonna do that?
Charlie stops short.
Karen's number tastes like Albany. Ah.
Fine. I'm leaving.
Charlie! Charlie!
Charlie turns back and lingers in the doorway.
All I want from you is another day.
For what?
One last tour of the battlefield. I can get around a city like New York. But I sometimes need a point in the right direction. What do you say, Charlie? What's one day between friends?
Charlie huffs and puts his hands on his hips.
All right. We'll say it's safe for another day. Will you give me your weapon?
Oh, Charlie. I'm a lieutenant colonel, United States Army. I'm not giving my fucking gun to anyone. Now, what are you drinking?
Colonel, this is unacceptable.
Unacceptable? What do you give me that prep school crap for? Unacceptable. What have they done? Taking the argon out of the boy? Put in Harvard Business School?
Well, then give me your bullets.
Frank cocks his head and draws in a breath. He stands pondering.
You do see the sense of it, Charlie, don't you? I can't chew the leather anymore. So why should I share the tribe's provisions? I mean, there's no one wants to tear a herring with me anymore.
Bullets, Colonel.
The bullets, Colonel. Sound like a guy in Lives of a Bengal Lancer.
Charlie waits with one hand on his hip. Frank pauses, then raises the pistol, discharges the clip, and tosses it across the room to him. Surprised, Charlie gingerly makes the catch and stares at the colonel.
What do you give a shit for?
About what?
About what? About whether I blow my brains out or not.
Frank raises the pistol to his temple. Charlie shifts uncomfortably.
Because I have a conscience, you know?
You have a conscience. I forgot. The Charlie conscience. Do we tell, do we not tell? Do we follow the rich boy's code or not? Do we let this blind asshole die or not? Yeah. Conscience. Charlie. When were you born, son? Around the time of the round table? Haven't you heard? Conscience is deod.
No, I haven't heard.
Well, then, take the fucking wax out of your ears! Grow up!
Charlie stares at Frank with a level gaze. Frank shrugs his shoulders and draws his lips tight.
It's fuck you, buddy. Cheat on your wife. Call your mother on Mother's Day. Charlie, it's all shit.
He pauses, then slowly turns his back to Charlie and walks away.
Where are you going?
I got piss call. I know I said I need you for just one day, but even I can't hold it that long. Oh, hey, Charlie. You forgot the one in the chamber.
He disengages the pistol's last bullet. It pops out and arcs across the room to Charlie.
Ah.
Later in a barber shop.
There you go, sir.
Thank you.
The shoeshiner packs up as the colonel gets a shave.
26 years in the service. Never let an age shine my shoes. Where are you going to be in 26 years, Charlie? Playing golf with your friends from the bad school, I bet.
I don't even like those guys.
Of course you don't. They're all assholes. Be a pleasure to squeal on them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I'm not a squealer.
I'm not a squealer. What is this, the driver's case?
Charlie looks down. The barber pats aftershave onto Frank's cheeks.
Ooh, ooh, mama.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charlie moves to help him.
Watch your step.
Frank steps down from the chair.
I'm getting that heavy feeling again, Charlie.
Charlie grimaces uneasily.
There's more to this, isn't there? Isn't there?
Later, Charlie leads Frank on a crowded sidewalk.
I was offered a bribe.
Now we're cooking.
Mr. Trask, the headmaster, promised to get me into Harvard.
If you squeal.
Yeah.
What a dilemma. Should Charlie Sims accept a free ride into Harvard or not? What do you think your friend George would do if he were in your shoes?
Well, it is, practically.
How?
I mean, it's just that Mr. Trask hasn't promised to get him into Harvard.
Mr. Trask doesn't have to. George's father's going to take care of that. Do the deal, Charlie. Take it. Go to Harvard.
I can't do that.
Why not?
It's just some things you just can't do.
Explain them to me.
He stops walking.
Louder, please.
I can't...
You're going to have a tough time in this world, Charlie. To ease the blow, let me buy you a drink. Come on.
In a restaurant.
Double Jack Daniels on the rocks. And bring my young friend here, A. Shirley Temple.
Hold on. Do you have beer?
Certainly. May I see some ID?
Are you interested in walking the rest of your life, Chappie?
I'm sorry, sir, but...
I'm a regular here. My boy's going on 23. Why don't you call up front? The office. Mr. Gilbert. He's a friend of mine.
The waiter looks at Charlie.
Any particular beer?
Schlitz. No Schlitz? Blatz. No Blatz? Improvise.
I'll do my best, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Charlie smiles.
You're human, Charlie. Beer? Who are we drinking with? Getting a nice soap and water feeling from down there.
Charlie turns and spots a chic young woman in a black sleeveless dress. She sits alone at a table set for two.
Female.
Female? You're
calling a female. Must mean you like her. You wouldn't be so casual.
Charlie smiles shyly.
She alone?
Yeah, she's alone.
Things are heating up. Chestnut hair?
Brown. Light brown.
22?
What am I, a guy at a carnival?
Day we stop looking, Charlie, is the day we die.
He gets up.
Move.
Where?
You know where, son. Be coy, Charlie.
He takes Charlie's arm.
This woman is made for you. I can feel it. Goddamn beautiful, isn't she?
She's not bad.
Ooh, bingo! Boy's alive. Come on, son. Perambulate.
They step down to a dance floor. Charlie reluctantly leads the way to the young woman's table. She looks up at them.
Excuse me, senorita. You mind if we join you? I'm feeling you're being neglected.
Well, I'm expecting somebody.
Instantly?
She glances around.
No, but any minute now.
Any minute? Some people live a lifetime in a minute. What are you doing right now?
I'm waiting for him.
Well, would you mind if we waited with you? You know, just to keep the womanizers from bothering you.
Her lips part in a gracious smile.
No, I don't mind.
Thank you.
With a smile, the colonel feels his way to the empty seat. Charlie directs him, then pulls up another chair.
You know, I detect a fragrance in the air. Don't tell me what it is. Ogilvy's sister's soap.
The young woman gapes.
That's amazing.
Well, I'm in the amazing business.
It is Ogilvy's sister's soap. My grandmother gave me 3 bars for Christmas.
Well, oh, crazy about your grandmother. You know, I think she'd have liked Charlie, too.
Don't pay any attention to her.
What's your name?
Donna.
Donna? I'm Frank. This here
is... This is Charlie.
Yes. She likes you. Charlie's having a difficult weekend. He's going through a crisis. How does he look like he's holding up?
He looks fine to me.
Oh, she does like you, Charlie.
Charlie gives an embarrassed roll of his eyes, then sneaks a shy glance at her.
So, Donna. You tango?
No, I wanted to learn once, but...
But?
But Michael didn't want to.
Michael? The one you're waiting for?
Michael thinks the tango's hysterical.
Well, I think Michael's hysterical.
You don't pay any attention to him. Did I already say that?
A beautiful laugh.
Thank you, Frank.
She looks down with a demure smile.
Would you like to learn to tango, Donna?
Donna glances uncertainly at the empty dance floor.
Right now?
I'm offering you my services. Free of charge. What do you say?
I think I'd be a little afraid. Afraid of making a mistake.
No mistakes in the tango, Donna. Not like life. Simple. That's what makes the tango so great. If you make a mistake, get all tangled up. Just tango on. Why don't you try?
Her eyes start to sparkle with amusement as she glances between them.
You try?
All right, I'll give it a try.
Hold me down, son.
All three get up. Donna waits uncertainly as Frank walks around and offers her his elbow.
Your arm.
She hesitates, then clasps his hand.
Charlie.
He beckons Charlie close.
I'm going to need some coordinates here, son.
The floor's about 20 by 30, and you're at the long end. There's some tables on the outside, and the band's on the way.
Frank hands Charlie his cane. Then he and Donna stroll side by side to the middle of the dance floor. Donna swallows anxiously, staying close. Beaming with anticipation, Frank pulls her around to face him. He holds her right hand, sets her left on his shoulder, then delicately cradles her back. She smiles nervously as Frank holds her close and takes small steps forward, rocking on his heels with each step. She moves with him. Then he gently twirls left, pulling her along. On the beat, Frank slides left, tilting their clasped hands high in the air. Donna giggles in surprise as he bends at the waist, dipping her back. She holds on tight as he leads her through another set of elegant stutter steps. Frank swings Donna out, then draws her back into a graceful turn. He dips her dramatically. Her pretty face shines as they move side by side in a stately circle. He lifts her right hand high and coaxes her into a twirl, letting her out and drawing her back into his embrace. Facing each other, they glide across the floor with strong steps and spins. They pause at one end of the floor, delicately dipping their knees. Back in the starting position, Frank steps to Donna's right, then left. Her movements confidently mirror his, and she gazes at him with a smile. A look of bright concentration animates Frank's face. He switches direction suddenly. Charlie watches, beaming. Frank leads Donna through a set of swooping sidesteps, and they dip in unison. A smile starts to spread on his face as they slow into a stately box step. Thrusting Donna's right hand high in the air, Frank tucks her close and spins her around fiercely. Again they push apart, then Frank draws her in. He holds up Donna's hand and twirls her in place. She spins back into his embrace. He holds her from behind and they parade across the floor, bobbing with each step. Frank coaxes Donna into a slow, graceful twirl, and they pose with their faces pressed together, her leg hooked around his. Donna bashfully brushes a curl from her face. Charlie smiles admiringly.
Frank, you are one incredible dancer.
Beaming, they stroll back to their table.
When you see Charlie dance?
He's a liar. I don't dance.
Isn't he a charmer? Truth is, not only can he dance, but he'll sing you a hell of a tune. He can do bird calls and imitate Bela Lugosi.
Hi, honey.
Michael, this is Frank, and this is Charlie.
Hi, Frank. Hi, Charlie. I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, that's okay. These two gentlemen entertained me, and time flew.
Your girl is a hell of a tango dancer.
At last, you found someone to tango with. That's terrific. Let me shake your hand.
No, it was Frank.
Well, hell, I'll shake both your hands. Honey, this looks like the place, but we really gotta go. We got a date with Daryl and Carol in the village. Do you have a check or something?
Michael, please. My pleasure.
Oh, no. I got this.
Michael, get your hand out of your pocket. I'll take it, really. Allow me.
He nods to Donna.
Why, thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye.
She looks back with a faint smile as Michael leads her away. Frank's head dips wearily, his face now empty.
Daryl and Carol. Yes.
Nighttime. Frank and Charlie sit in the limousine as it idles in front of an elegant stone apartment building.
It's apartment 17E, Colonel. She's expecting you. You don't have to worry about a thing. She's the creme de la creme. My buddy took the vice chancellor of Germany to her. Now he wants to immigrate to this country.
You did good, hombre.
He turns to the grinning Charlie.
My hair. How is it?
It's perfect.
Frank opens his coat to reveal a red pocket handkerchief.
I got the red foulard okay, didn't I?
Yeah, real dark red.
Burgundy, Charlie. Burgundy. They love it.
He pats his face, then his tie.
Bayroom. Windsor knot.
He presses a hand to his chest.
That's my heart. I'm feeling.
Charlie smiles gently. Frank turns to the window, his face softened apprehensively. He nods to himself.
I'm off.
He unfolds his cane and walks toward the building's entrance. Charlie pokes his head out the window. Without turning, the colonel raises his left arm in a curt wave. In the car, Charlie notices a phone.
Can you get long distance on this?
And how? Be my guest.
Taking a slip of paper from his pocket, Charlie dials a number.
Sugarbush Lodge.
Hi, George Willis, please.
One moment, please.
Hello?
Harry?
Chaz, how are you? You just caught us. We're about to shoot George over to the airport.
Why is George going to the airport?
Hold on. Maybe you should talk to the man himself. Jazz.
Yeah, hi, George.
You just caught me.
Yes, that's what Harry said. Where are you going?
Home.
To Boston?
Catching the puddle jumper. Just keep your fingers crossed.
What are you going home for?
I was thinking, Jazz, this asshole, Trask, is making no sense at all. Somebody's got to talk to him. I'm my father's class 59.
Your father? I thought we were going to keep our parents out of this.
This guy Trask is out of control, Jazz. Out of control. Somebody's got to talk to him. My father's a major fundraiser, you know.
No, I didn't.
Right. Just relax. He'll get us off the hook. Oh, I got to go. Everything all right?
Sure.
I'll see you Monday. Bye.
Bye.
Later, Charlie waits in the back seat, lost in thought. The chauffeur fidgets, trying to sleep. At the apartment building, the doorman holds the wrought iron door open for Frank.
Good night, sir.
Blinking, the colonel slowly taps his way along the sidewalk toward the limo. Seeing him, Charlie stirs and gets out of the car to meet him. Feeling for the open door, Frank gingerly lowers himself into the car. He sinks heavily into his seat as Charlie walks around to the other side. Smiling fondly, Charlie studies the colonel's dazed expression.
What a beautiful woman.
His eyes shine. Then he blinks and shakes his head clear. The next morning, Charlie watches TV in the hotel room.
Hello there.
Dressed in blue pants and a blue Oxford shirt, he sits on the couch with his feet propped up on a coffee table. He glances worriedly at his watch, looks at the bedroom door, and picks up the TV remote control. Standing, Charlie hikes up his pants and tentatively approaches the closed door. Standing over the knob, he cocks an ear, then lifts his hand to knock. He opens the door and peeks in.
Colonel?
With wide, concerned eyes, Charlie slowly walks into the bedroom. Frank lies on his back in bed, covered by a blanket. His eyes are closed. His head tosses wearily.
Colonel, you all right?
Frank opens his eyes.
What is there?
Charlie stands beside him.
It's afternoon. You've been sleeping all morning.
So what?
I don't know, I thought.
Charlie bites his lip.
I talked to George last night. His father's a big deal alumnus at school. He's got a lot of pull.
Really?
Yeah, he's going to talk to the headmaster. George thinks he might be able to get us off the hook.
Get us off the hook?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Now, watch the us part.
Girl, don't you want to get up and do something?
His eyes fall shut. Charlie shakes his leg.
Girl.
Oh, Charlie, what do you want?
I don't know.
You're making me nervous.
My wallet is on the dresser. Take out your plane ticket. And $400. Mustering out pay plus airport to school taxi.
Colonel, it's no rush. I mean, I could stay for a while.
Well, Charlie, you already give me a day. And for that day, I am eternally grateful. Right now, I have other plans.
What other plans do you have?
To die, son.
Colonel, you're... Come on, Colonel, you're not going to die today.
Charlie, give me a hand.
He limply raises his hand. Charlie takes it.
You go now, boy, okay? You go just... Just leave me asleep here.
He rolls onto his side.
Look, can we start over, please? What do you feel like doing today, huh? I mean, look at this. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful day. Let's...
Frank lies unmoving, his face peaceful.
Girl, I know you don't want to be a party poop, so let's... You know, let's go out and do something, huh? Let's go for a ride.
Slowly, Frank's eyes open.
Yeah, a ride.
A ride.
Charlie starts to grin.
Yeah, Colonel Slade, what do you say? Let's go for a ride, huh?
Frank lifts his head off the pillow and sits up a bit.
What kind of ride?
Later at a car dealership.
Yeah, this is a valid Oregon driver's license. And we let appropriate customers test drive the Testarossa.
But you're 17 years old and you're with a blind companion. That we don't do.
This is a $190,000 piece of machinery. I'm not letting it out this door.
All right, well, how about this one over here?
That's a Cabriolet T, the same deal. You think I'm going to let an unaccompanied kid get behind the wheel of a $110,000 car?
He will not be unaccompanied. I'll be with him. I'm his father.
You're his father?
Yes.
I have an idea. Why don't I take your father for a test drive?
What's your quota, Freddy?
Don't worry about my quota. I do very well.
How many Ferraris you sold this month, though?
It's not relevant to this discussion.
Freddy, the 80s are over. Are you trying to tell me these things are just walking out of the store?
This is a Ferrari, sir. This is the finest piece of machinery made in the automobile industry.
Well, if you like it that much, why don't you sleep with it? Why are you selling it?
Listen, I'd love to accommodate you, but...
If this car performs the way I expect it to, you will get a certified check of 101,000 and change when you come in here tomorrow morning.
It's 109,000 plus $950 plus tax.
Freddie, for you, 107 all in, plus a case of champagne. Go with your leftover turkey. What do you say? Don't worry about the boy. He drives so smooth, you can boil an egg on the engine. When we bring the car back, I'll peel the egg for you.
Listen, you made me laugh, but I can't let the car go out.
Want a deposit?
This is not an installment item, sir.
Colonel Slade draws the salesman aside.
Freddy, you're no spring chicken, are you?
Well, you know what they call me at the home office? The Gray Ghost. You know why they still keep me around? There's no kid here that can move a Ferrari like I can. I'm known from coast to coast like butter and toast. Ask anybody about Freddy Bisco. When I get a Ferrari, out the door.
Ha! You just made me laugh, Freddy.
Yeah. He flashes a wad of bills.
2,000. Unless you take it, you're going to make me cry.
Freddy gazes at the colonel, then at the money.
I'm a Gray Ghost, too.
Later, Charlie and Frank drive down a city street in a bright red Ferrari Cabriolet T with the top down. Sleek and shiny, the low, wide car turns a corner and accelerates.
See? This is fun, isn't it?
Charlie's smile fades as he sees the colonel's downcast expression. He shifts gears. He struggles with the stick.
Drop her into neutral. Slide her into second. Pop the clutch.
Charlie's face relaxes. He looks gratefully at the weary colonel. With a resigned look, Charlie turns his attention back to the road and drives on. Later, the Ferrari crawls through a district of patched cobblestone streets lined with grim factory buildings. The empty streets are long and straight. Frank drives the car. Charlie sits in the passenger seat, glancing nervously at the street. He steadies the steering wheel.
Straight. Hold it right like that. Feel it?
Yeah.
That's straight. Straight street. Just keep it straight.
They drift to the right toward a parked car.
Keep it straight.
No fun. Just keep it straight, John. You gotta move a little. Feel it grow.
Please, just like this, all right? There you go. Make it nice and easy. You like this?
The colonel brightens.
Slow down, Colonel. Go a little fast. Colonel, slow it down.
Something's happened to my foot.
Colonel, slow it down, please.
Hold on, Charlie. I think we got another gear here.
Colonel Slade!
They roar toward a curbside dumpster. Charlie veers the car away in the nick of time.
He's killed! Don't blame me, Charlie. I can't see.
Slow it down!
The Ferrari speeds straight as an arrow. The cobblestone side streets flash by in a blur.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. Now, let's see how this baby corners.
Corners?
Yeah. Say when.
Say when what?
Say when to turn.
Colonel, you can't turn the car.
Where's the turn, Charlie? 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, right oblique, right face. Come on, talk to me.
It's left, I guess.
Left, I knew it. Okay, now?
A street flashes by.
No, not now.
Now!
Colonel, please.
Charlie, I'm going to do it anyway, all right? Whether you say so or not, here we go.
Okay. Wait. Just wait.
Here I go.
Now.
Frank wrenches the steering wheel hard left. The car skids onto a side street.
Onto that!
Oh, Charlie! Whoa! You're riding with my third happy man!
A building looms at the end of the street.
Charlie, you gotta turn again.
Specific, sir.
Left now!
Okay! Flag. I haven't even opened her up yet. This way's a curve.
Pull over. Slow down. Slow down, Colonel.
All right, I'm doing it.
Yep.
Got it.
He pulls the car over, rolling to a stop on a deserted cobblestone street. A police car stops behind them. Charlie wipes his brow and breathes a sigh of relief.
I haven't had a ticket in years.
A young officer gets out and walks up to them.
I'll do the talking.
License and registration.
Colonel Slade looks up at the officer as Charlie picks up a sheaf of papers from the seat and hands it over. The officer glances at Charlie, then studies the papers.
What are you, test driving this baby?
Don't she purr, though?
At 70 miles an hour?
You should hear her at 125.
Where's your license?
At the dealer's. They give it back to you when you return the car.
You got ID?
You bet.
He pulls a card from his pocket.
Indeed.
Lieutenant Colonel Slade.
And you, soldier?
The name is Police Officer Gore.
You're doing a hell of a job, Gore.
Oh, and so are you, Colonel. Who's the kid?
My boy, Charlie. kept telling me to let her out. What was I going to do? Disappoint him?
Yes.
Frank raises his eyebrows.
Tell you what I'm going to do, Colonel. I'm going to let you go. On one condition.
What's that?
That you take this rig straight back to the dealer.
He holds out the papers.
You got it.
Shut up.
Want this?
Sure.
Frank takes the papers.
Gore, your face and your voice are familiar. You ever in the officers' club at Da Nang?
No.
Never in the army?
No, Coast Guard.
Good Lord.
He smiles up at the officer.
Your dad is looking good, Charlie. He's got a heavy foot, though. Tell him to take you to light, all right?
I hear you.
All right. Thanks.
Gore returns to his car and drives away. Frank waves at him as he passes.
Get out of the car, because you are not driving anymore, right?
Just keeping this baby warm. I'm not driving anymore.
The colonel's head droops to one side.
Yes.
Charlie reaches for Frank's hand and helps him step out of the car.
Take my arm.
I'm okay.
Colonel, it's really bumpy here.
I'm okay.
Frank shuffles over the cobblestones, gazing blankly. After a few steps, he pauses, standing unsteadily. Coming up beside him, Charlie lays a concerned hand on his arm.
All right.
Frank flaps his arms wearily, then turns to Charlie.
Yeah.
He gives a slight nod. Later, Charlie leads him on a crowded sidewalk.
Red light. Hold it.
Charlie watches the traffic absently while Frank waits with a growing, impatient smirk.
Taking too long.
He starts across the street, striding without hesitation.
Shit,
Charlie runs after him. Cars stop inches from Frank. He never falters. He feels his way around the hood of a stopped car and continues to the curb where he trips, knocks over a trash can, and falls to the ground.
Shit.
Charlie helps him up.
How are you doing?
Take the cane. I gotta take a fist.
Take the cane, Colonel.
Happens to the best.
Colonel, we're on Park Avenue. You can't go to the bathroom.
Perfect place.
You get arrested?
Never been housebroken.
He trips and falls.
Shit! What's the matter with you, Colonel?
Charlie bends over and tries to haul him to his feet, but Frank stays limp in Charlie's arms.
What are you doing? What is it? Stand up. Come on.
Give me off.
Here's your cane.
Take me back to the hotel, son.
They enter their hotel room. Frank slouches in the doorway.
Home at last.
Unsteadily, he feels his way inside, brushing his hand along a countertop. Watching him, Charlie closes the door. Frank stands by a wall, his lined face gaunt with fatigue.
You all right now?
Yeah.
Do you want to use the bathroom?
No.
Frank pulls off his black gloves and stuffs them into a coat pocket.
Can I get you something? You sure you're all right?
I'm fine, Charlie.
Charlie stares at him, then reluctantly turns away and takes off his overcoat. His face is taut with concern. His eyes dart around nervously. Frank still stands by the wall, clutching his cane.
Mind if I use the phone?
Where?
Charlie nods, puts his coat on a couch, and walks over to a phone. Frank, now leaning against the wall, takes his hand out of his pocket and slowly rubs his brow. Charlie watches him and cradles the phone.
Hello.
Hi, is George there, please?
Senior or junior?
Junior.
Who's this?
A friend of his from school.
Well, I'm sorry, but George isn't going to be talking to any of his friends from school right now.
Oh.
Goodbye.
Charlie stares numbly at the receiver, then puts it down. He nervously licks his lips and looks up at Frank, who now stands firmly facing him.
Colonel, are you looking at me?
Frank shakes his head.
I'm blind, Charlie.
Charlie stares at Frank quizzically.
I'm going to take a nap. Too much fresh air.
He shuffles toward the bedroom.
It's probably a good idea. I'll help you to your own.
Frank pauses in the door.
No. Couch. I like this couch here.
He turns toward the couch. Charlie frowns.
You sure you're all right, girl?
I got a headache. Why don't you go downstairs and get me some aspirin? Charlie.
Some aspirin?
Yeah. Also,
He takes out some money.
I feel like a cigar. Give me a couple of Monte Cristos. Number one.
Monte Cristos number one.
Yeah. You won't be able to get them at the newsstand downstairs. So why don't you go over to 50th and 5th, Dunhill's. A fellow named Arnold there in the humidor. Tell him they're for me. You'll know.
In the elegant Waldorf Astoria lobby, Charlie strides to the door, his face still tight with concern. Near an exit, he slows to a stop. A puzzled frown creases his brow. He half turns, pauses, then starts quickly back inside. Charlie re-enters the room. His eyes fix on the empty couch. He looks around anxiously, then approaches the open bedroom doorway. Taking a few hesitant steps inside, he sees Lieutenant Colonel Slade putting on his dress blues decked with medals.
You're back too fast. You didn't get my cigars, did you?
His gun lies next to a loaded clip on a white cloth.
Get out of here, Charlie.
He loads the clip.
I thought we had a deal.
I welched. I'm a welcher. Didn't I tell you?
No, what you told me was that you gave me all the bullets.
I lied.
Well, you could have fooled me.
And I did. Charlie, how are you ever going to survive in this world without me?
Charlie starts to inch forward.
Well, why don't you just give me the gun, all right?
Stony-faced, Frank feels for his gun, grasps it, and levels it at Charlie.
What are you doing?
I'm going to shoot you, too. Your life's finished anyway. Your friend George is going to sing like a canary, and so are you. And once you've sung, Charlie, my boy, you're going to take your place on that long, gray line of American manhood. And you will be through.
I'd like to disagree with you, Colonel.
You're in no position to disagree with me, boy. I got a loaded 45 here. You got pimples. I'm going to kill you, Charlie. Because I can't bear the thought of you selling out.
Put the gun down, all right, Colonel?
What? You give me an ultimatum?
No, I'm...
I give the ultimatums.
I'm sorry.
All right, I'm sorry.
It's all right. Charlie.
Slowly, the gun drops to his side.
You break my heart, son. All my life, I stood up to everyone and everything because it made me feel important. You do it because you mean it. You got integrity, Charlie. I don't know whether they shoot you or adopt you.
Not much of a choice, is it, sir?
Oh, don't get cute now.
Colonel, could you please put the gun away?
I asked you a question. Do you want me to adopt you, or don't you?
Please, I mean... You're just in a slump right now.
Slump?
He smiles faintly.
No slump, Charlie. I'm bad. I'm not bad, no. I'm rotten.
You're not bad. You're just in pain.
Frank presses his eyes shut for a moment.
What do you know about pain? You little snail dart from the Pacific Northwest. Fuck you know about pain.
Let me have the gun, Colonel.
No time to grow a dick, son.
He re-aims the gun.
Just give me the gun, all right, Colonel?
Charlie extends a pleading hand and inches forward.
I'm talking a parade ground. Ten hut!
Charlie freezes, his eyes wide.
Soldier, that was a direct order.
Give me the gun.
You can stay or you can leave. You understand? Either way, I'm gonna do this thing. Now, why don't you leave and spare yourself?
Want your gun, Colonel?
Frank backs away as Charlie advances.
I'm gonna give myself a count. You need a count. Balance. Five. Four. Three. Two. One. Fuck it.
As he raises the gun to his temple, Charlie leaps forward and tries to tear it from his hand. Frank pins Charlie to a wall and they struggle for the gun.
Give it! Fuck!
Frank wrenches it free and aims it at Charlie's head.
Stay right here!
Get out of here!
Stay right here!
I'll blow your fucking head off!
Do it! You want to do it? Do it! Let's go!
Get out of here!
You fucked up, all right? So what? So everybody does it. Get on with your life, would you?
What life? I got no life! I'm in the dark here! You understand? I'm in the dark!
So give up. You want to give up, give up. Because I'm giving up too. You said I'm through, you're right, I am through. We're both through. It's all over. So let's get on. Let's fucking do it. Let's fucking pull the trigger, you miserable blind motherfucker.
Frank closes his eyes, fighting to keep calm. His face relaxes.
Pull the trigger.
Here we go, Charlie.
I'm ready.
Charlie's frightened blue eyes stare at the colonel unflinchingly.
You don't want to die.
And neither do you.
Frank nods wearily.
Give me one reason not to.
I'll give you two. You can dance a tango and drive a Ferrari better than anyone I've ever seen.
You've never seen anyone do either.
A humorless smile touches his lips.
Give me a gun, Colonel.
As his smile fades, an uncertain, weary expression comes over Frank's face. He points the gun skyward.
Oh, where do I go from here, Charlie?
If you're tangled up, just tango on.
You're asking me to dance, Charlie.
Frank's eyes glisten with tears.
Did you ever have the feeling that you wanted to go and still have the feeling that you wanted to stay?
Slowly, his grip loosens from Charlie's lapel and he backs away. Charlie straightens up, tears streaming down his cheeks. Frank pats his uniform.
You like my blues, Charlie?
Yeah, they're beautiful.
I wore these for Lyndon's inauguration. Of course, we weren't the number one ball. But he dropped by anyway.
Would you please give me the gun?
You're asking an officer to surrender his sidearm.
You don't have to surrender it. You just put it down for a little while. All right, just put it down.
Frank shakes his head wearily and shuffles slowly away from Charlie.
Oh, I could use a drink, Charlie.
About a cup of coffee.
Too big a leap for me right now, Charlie. Maybe tomorrow. No, a Mr. John Daniels would be preferred. No water, Charlie.
He unloads the clip.
No water.
Please.
He places his gun and clip on the white cloth and folds it carefully over. Later, he slumps on a couch.
Let's return, Colonel.
A maid unlocks the door and looks in.
Oh, I'm so sorry. What time do you want me to turn down the bed?
Maybe later, all right?
What do you mean, senorita? Just come right in.
He pats the couch. She stares at him steadily.
Later, please.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
She gives the colonel a sly smile.
Nice voice.
Charlie sits and grins.
Boy, you have a one-track mind.
Is there anything else in this world, Charlie?
Not for you.
You know what's kept me going all these years? The thought that one day
he shakes off a dreamy gaze.
Never mind.
The what?
Silly. It's the thought that maybe one day I could have a woman's arms wrapped around me. And her legs wrapped around me. I could wake up in the morning and she'd still be there. Smell of her. All funky and warm. I finally gave up on it.
I don't know why you can't have that. When when we get back to New Hampshire, I don't know why you can't find someone. I mean, you're a good-looking guy, and you're fun to be with, and great travel companion, sensitive, compassionate.
Charlie studies the colonel with a mischievous grin.
Charlie? Are you fucking with me?
His eyes twinkle.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, Manny. We missed our plane.
Your plane, Charlie. My ticket was one way.
Nighttime, outside the hotel.
New England Thruway all the way, Colonel?
All the way, Manolo.
Manny holds the car door as Frank lowers himself into the limo. Later, Charlie gazes out the window, lost in thought.
I'm getting that heavy feeling again, Charlie.
I think you were right about George and his father.
I'm sorry to hear that.
When we get back, Mr. Trask is bringing us up in front of the whole school.
Putting your feet to the fire.
Special meeting of the disciplinary committee.
And what are you going to tell them?
I don't know. I'll think of something.
Oh, Charlie. Why are you all alone in this thing? Where's your father?
He left.
I thought it was a mom and pop store. Who's the pop?
It's my stepfather.
Oh, yeah. But why isn't he in on this? Something wrong with him?
No, he's okay. We just, I don't get along very well.
Why not?
Because he's an asshole.
Ah. Well, that's all right, Charlie. Every family's got one nowadays.
The next morning, the long black limousine cruises along a driveway through the quiet Baird School campus, stopping in front of a large gray stone residence hall. A few students in heavy sweaters walk briskly past, hands stuffed in their pockets against the early morning cold. Manny gets out with Charlie, opens the trunk, and pulls out Charlie's bags.
That's it?
That's it.
Take care of yourself, kid.
All right, Manny, thanks.
Charlie walks around to Frank's window.
No, I'm not opening. I hate goodbyes.
So, you'll be all right, huh?
We'll be fine.
All right.
What's that?
It's the first bell. Just got time to get cleaned up.
I almost forgot.
He reaches into a pocket and pulls out a wad of bills.
I owe you some money.
Charlie looks down, embarrassed.
$300. Job well done.
Reluctantly, Charlie takes the money.
You ever need any references, Charlie? I'm your man.
Thanks, Colonel.
Frank nods at him vaguely. Charlie leans his head in the window.
It's 16 Water Street, just over the bridge.
You'll find it. Goodbye, Charlie.
They shake hands firmly.
Goodbye, Colonel.
Frank pulls Charlie down to the window.
Where is that?
He brings his right hand up to Charlie's face and runs the backs of his fingers slowly along Charlie's chin, mouth, nose, and cheeks. He lightly pats Charlie's left cheek and lowers his hand.
Okay, Manny.
Charlie's soft, wondering gaze is cut short by the closing tinted window. He stands watching as the limousine drives away. Charlie looks at the money in his hand and pockets it. Later in the morning, clean-cut boys in jacket and tie walk briskly across the campus on paved paths and well-trodden grass, converging at an imposing gray stone cathedral-styled building with a square tower rising above the arched main entrance. Inside, the students pour into a high-ceilinged meeting hall, quickly filling rows of severe wooden pews. Harry, Trent, and Jimmy sit together. Harry smirks confidently. Oil portraits of bared men line the walls above rich brown paneling. On a stage at the front of the room, a podium separates two tables. A row of chairs lines the back wall. Charlie walks up steps to the stage and takes a seat at one of the tables. He meets the dull gaze of George Willis, sitting across the stage at the other table with his stern-faced father. Charlie stares hollowly at George, then looks away, his face tight with apprehension. In the audience, Harry stands up.
George! George!
When George looks out at him, Harry raises his eyebrows in a conspiratorial, encouraging nod. Noticing the exchange, Charlie smirks wryly at George, then swallows tightly as he spots Headmaster Trask striding up the aisle. The students settle into their seats as Trask climbs the steps to the stage. Four faculty members and four students sit in the row of chairs on stage. Trask nods at them as he passes, then steps up to the podium and stands facing the assembly with a steely glare.
I called an open meeting of this institution this morning because the incident that occurred this Tuesday last describes an issue that concerns all of us. Not an isolated case of vandalism. What happened is a symptom of the sickness of a society. A sickness which runs counter to the principles this school was founded on.
From a rear entrance, Manny appears, leading Frank Slade. They walk slowly up the aisle toward the stage.
In the White House. Bared men have run state departments and investment houses, founded department stores and coached football teams. Our alumni receive their bulletins in ashrams in India and in palaces in Jordan. We are, in fact, known around the world as the cradle of this country's leadership. A beacon of nations.
Got room for me up there, Charlie.
But today, we are bleeding from disrespect. Blatant disrespect.
Charlie guides the colonel up the steps, leads him to his table, and pulls up another chair.
A disrespect for the bared tradition. And as the custodians of that tradition, we are here today to protect each other from those who threaten it. Who is this, Mr. Sims?
This is Mr. Frank Slade, Lieutenant Colonel, United States Army, retired. I'm here in place of Charlie's parents.
Excuse me?
In loco parentis. They could not make the trip from Oregon today.
And what is your relationship to Mr. Sims?
Is this a courtroom?
The closest thing we could manage to it.
And if we're taking oaths, there's a few people I'd like to swear in.
There are no oaths at Baird. We are all on our honor.
Larry and Franny Sims are very dear, close friends of mine. They've asked me to appear here on Charlie's behalf. Okay?
Happy to have you with us, Colonel.
Trask turns to face George, who sits with bowed head next to his father.
Mr. Willis.
George winces.
Which Mr. Willis? George Jr., sir.
George Jr. lifts his head and gazes dully at the headmaster.
Yes.
You were in a position last Tuesday night to see who committed this act of vandalism. Who was it?
Well, I have an idea who it was.
No, no, not an idea, Mr. Willis. Did you see or did you not see?
Well, I didn't have my contacts in.
In the audience, Harry, Trent, and Jimmy smirk. George's father frowns darkly at him.
I was in the library, had taken my glasses off, and I was going to put my contacts back in. Then I help Sims close up, and the next thing I know, we're outside, and I hear this sound, and I didn't have any time to put my contacts in.
Whom, with your limited vision, did you see?
George stares blankly at Trask. His father leans in close and whispers in his ear while Harry, Trent, Jimmy, and Charlie wait anxiously. George shakes off his father. He looks around thoughtfully.
Like I say, it was blurry. I can't see without my contacts.
What did you say, Mr. Willis?
What? You mean definitively?
Stop fencing with me, Mr. Willis. Tell me what you saw.
George shakes his head and smiles nervously.
All right, now don't hold me to this, but no contacts. It's dark. And everything, I mean...
Mr. Willis!
Maybe Harry Havemeyer, Trent Potter, and Jimmy Jameson.
In the crowd, Harry glares and shakes his head.
Maybe.
Ballpark, best guess.
Could you provide us with some detail?
You know, why don't you ask Charlie? I really think he was closer.
George Sr. gives Trask a challenging stare. Trask's mouth hardens, and he turns to face Charlie.
Mr. Sims.
Yes.
You don't wear contact lenses, do you?
No, sir.
With your untrammeled sight, whom did you see?
Well, I saw something. But I couldn't say who.
All right. What was the something you saw?
I couldn't say.
You couldn't say or you wouldn't say?
No, I just... I just couldn't say.
Couldn't, wouldn't, shouldn't. Mr. Sims, you're exhausting my patience and making a mockery of these proceedings. I will give you one last chance. The consequences of your response will be dire. By dire, Mr. Sims, I mean your future will be jeopardized permanently. Now, for the last time, what did you see last Tuesday night outside my office?
I saw somebody.
I saw somebody. Good. Did you see their size and shape?
Yeah.
And they were the size and shape of whom?
They were the size and shape of... Almost any Baird student, sir.
Tendons strain in Trask's neck as he glares at Charlie. Finally, he blinks and turns to face the audience. Harry breathes a sigh of relief. Frank gives Charlie a reassuring pat on the arm.
I am left with no real witness. Mr. Willis's testimony is not only vague, it is unsubstantiated. The substance I was looking for, Mr. Sims, was to come from you.
Charlie looks down and licks his lips.
Sorry.
I'm sorry too, Mr. Sims. Because you know what I'm going to do, in as much as I can't punish Mr. Havemeyer, Mr. Potter, or Mr. Jameson. And I won't punish Mr. Willis. He's the only party to this incident who is still worthy of calling himself a Baird man. I'm going to recommend to the disciplinary committee that you be expelled. Mr. Sims, you are a cover-up artist and you are a liar.
But not a snitch!
Excuse me?
No, I don't think I will.
Mr. Slade.
This is such a crock of shit.
Please watch your language, Mr. Slade. You are in the Baird School, not a barracks. Mr. Sims, I will give you one final opportunity to speak up.
Mr. Sims doesn't want it. He doesn't need to be labeled still worthy of being a Baird man. What the hell is that? What is your motto here? Boys, inform on your classmates. Save your hide. Anything short of that, we're going to burn you at the stake? Well, gentlemen, when the shit hits the fan, some guys run and some guys stay. Here's Charlie facing the fire, and there's George hiding in Big Daddy's pocket. And what are you doing? You're going to reward George and destroy Charlie.
Are you finished, Mr. Slade?
No, I'm just getting warmed up. I don't know who went to this place. William Howard Taft, William Jennings Bryan, William Tell, whoever. Their spirit is dead, if they ever had one. It's gone. You're building a rat ship here. A vessel for seagoing snitches. And if you think you're preparing these minnows for manhood, you better think again. Because I say you are killing the very spirit this institution proclaims it instills. What a sham. What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today? I mean, the only class in this act is sitting next to me, and I'm here to tell you, this boy's soul is intact. It's non-negotiable. You know how I know? Someone here, and I'm not going to say who, offered to buy it. Only Charlie here wasn't selling.
Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order? I show you out of order. You don't know what out of order is, Mr. Trask. I'd show you, but I'm too old. I'm too tired. I'm too fucking blind. If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place. Out of order. Who the hell do you think you're talking to? I've been around, you know. There was a time I could see. And I have seen boys like these, younger than these, their arms torn out, their legs ripped off. But there is nothing like the sight of an amputated spirit. There is no prosthetic for that. You think you're merely sending this splendid foot soldier back home to Argonne with his tail between his legs, but I say you are executing his soul! And why? Because he's not a bad man. Bad men. You hurt this boy, you're going to be bad bums. The lot of you. And Harry, Jimmy, Trent, wherever you are out there, fuck you too.
Stand down, Mr. Slade.
I'm not finished. As I came in here, I heard those words. Cradle of leadership. Well, when the bow breaks, the cradle will fall. And it has fallen here. It has fallen. Makers of men. Creators of leaders. Be careful what kind of leaders you're producing here. I don't know if Charlie's silence here today is right or wrong. I'm not a judge or jury. But I can tell you this. He won't sell anybody out to buy his future. And that, my friends, is called integrity. That's called courage. Now, that's the stuff leaders should be made of. Now, I have come to the crossroads in my life. I always knew what the right path was. Without exception, I knew. But I never took it. You know why? It was too damn hard. Now, here's Charlie. He's come to the crossroads. He has chosen a path. It's the right path. It's a path made of principle that leads to character. Let him continue on his journey. You hold this boy's future in your hands, committee. It's a valuable future. Believe me. Don't destroy it. Protect it. Embrace it. It's going to make you proud one day, I promise you.
Everyone in the room watches Frank take his seat. Charlie stares at him in awe, a grateful smile spreading over his pallid face. The colonel turns to Charlie.
How's that for going?
Students grin as they applaud. On stage, George Jr. closes his eyes and sighs nervously while his father glowers. Behind Trask, the members of the disciplinary committee rise from their seats, group together, and start to confer. Trask bangs his gavel on the podium.
Nothing will shut him up, sir.
The disciplinary committee will take this matter under advisement in closed session.
Trask leans into the group. Colonel Slade strains to hear.
What are you doing, Charlie?
I think they're going to come to a decision.
Trask straightens his tie and steps back to the podium.
Apparently that meeting will be unnecessary. Mrs. Hunsicker?
Mrs. Hunsicker steps to the podium and reads from a sheet of paper.
The Joint Student-Faculty Disciplinary Committee needs no further sessions. They have come to a decision. Messrs. Havemeyer, Potter, and Jameson are placed on probation for suspicion of ungentlemanly conduct. It is further recommended that Mr. George Willis, Jr. receive neither recognition nor commendation for his cooperation. Mr. Charles Sims is excused from any further response to this incident.
Hoorah!
The students jump to their feet, applauding and pumping their fists in the air. In their midst, Harry, Trent, and Jimmy sit, subdued. Charlie's face relaxes into a wide, relieved smile. George Sr. smacks the table in disgust. Beside him, his son slouches in a daze. Frank whispers in Charlie's ear, then pulls his sunglasses from his pocket. Charlie grins with delight as they stand to leave. Frank dons his sunglasses and unfolds his cane. Charlie accompanies him down the steps at the side of the stage. The colonel nods expressionless as Charlie leads him up the aisle, past the raucous rows of admiring students. Manny follows as they make their way to the exit. Outside, the colonel holds Charlie's arm as they walk down a flight of stone steps. They walk briskly along a paved path. A red-haired woman catches up with them.
I'm Christine Downs, Colonel Slade. I teach political science. I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate your coming here and speaking your mind.
Why, thank you. Are you married?
She looks at Charlie, who smiles warmly.
Went to an artillery school at Fort Sill with a Mickey Downs. Thought he might have snagged you.
No, I'm afraid not.
Colonel Slade was on Lyndon Johnson's staff, Miss Downs.
Were you? Fascinating.
We should get together, talk politics sometime.
She gazes at him as he sniffs the air.
Fleur de Rocaille.
Yes.
Flowers from a book.
That's right.
Charlie looks at each of them with a growing smile.
Well, Miss Downs, I'll know where to find you. Charlie.
Bye, Miss Downs.
Bye.
She watches them walk away.
You don't have to tell me, Charlie. 5'7". auburn hair, beautiful brown eyes.
Later, the limousine pulls up across the street from the Rossi's house. Manny gets out and opens Frank's door. Charlie stands nearby as Frank unfolds his cane and steps out of the car.
Yabba dabba doo. Manny?
He hands Manny a wad of money.
Oh, Colonel, this is too much.
Never mind, you earned it. Next time Charlie and I want to take a breather to New York, we're going to call you. You can drive us both ways.
You're wrong, Colonel. Not only will it be an honor, I'll give you a rate.
I'll see your rate and raise you. Stay out of harm's way, Manny.
Take care, Colonel.
You too. No thanks, Charlie. I'll take it from here. You go on ahead. Manny will drive you back to your dorm. Come by before you go home for Christmas. We'll have a little cheer. And if you like, you'll stay for dinner. Sometimes she cooks a pot roast. It's almost edible.
All right, Colonel. That'd be real.
Bye, Charlie.
Colonel Slade walks away, carrying his travel bag and tapping his cane. Charlie gazes after him as he heads up the steep driveway. The two Rossi children play at the top, Francine on a tricycle, Willie with a toy typewriter. Frank stops in front of Francine.
Who's there? That you? Francine.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Taking a ride? What about you give me a lift?
No.
No? Oh, come on, Francie. I think we should make up. Don't you think it's about time we made up?
No.
Francine?
What?
Your Uncle Frank's had himself a really hard Thanksgiving weekend. What's that? I hear a chipmunk. Is it a walrus? No, it's Willie. Willie, I've asked you to help me with my bag. Come on, son. Help me with my bag. Come on. You got it? Hold on, you big struggle. Come on.
Watching from the street, Charlie smiles and gets in the car.
Francie, come on with me and Willie. I'll let you make me some marshmallow chocolate. What do you say? Good.
Francine and Willie follow Frank into the converted garage behind the Rossi's house. The limousine slowly pulls away from the curb and drives off down the street. Fade to black. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston.
I hope you enjoyed this movie. I don't have...